Hey, Chris Hemmelman.
Hello.
Hey, listeners. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bob Thune, and I'm here with just Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church today. No Dusty White. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. Today, we're talking about making faith magnetic. More on that topic in a minute. First of all, a snack shout out.
Ooh, got some good ones today.
To our former producer, Bethany.
Oh, Bethany.
Who dropped by and said, hey, I got some snacks for you guys today. Bethany, thank you so much for providing us pastries from Sweet Magnolia's Bake Shop, one of the most amazing local bakeries in Omaha, Nebraska.
It's very good. Did she fill in the gap because we were complaining about no snacks last time?
She must have. Also, there's an assortment of things. We've only eaten a couple of them, Chris, so there's going to be some leftovers here. But I think one of those is like a savory scone, and then the other one is a sweet scone. And so you kind of had to make the call, like, what kind of afternoon is it?
Yes.
Is it an onions and cheese afternoon, or is it like a cinnamon and sugar afternoon?
So, yeah.
Thanks, Bethany. Chris, you said you were at the Saddle Creek Breakfast Club recently.
Yes.
They're apparently moving across the street from our church
building. Lucky you guys.
Which is nowhere near Saddle Creek. So I guess their name will speak of a moment in their history that they moved away from. But I hope they get there soon.
Yeah. The ham and eggs there is one of my favorite things to get in all of Omaha.
Do you think that when they move across the street, we can get people to just cater that for the Wednesday conversation?
That would be amazing.
Instead of getting us a snack, just bring us a whole meal from Saddle Creek Breakfast.
Just bring us some breakfast.
We wanted to talk about, coming off our conversation about the Keller Center, one of my colleagues, one of my other fellows at the Keller Center for Cultural Apologetics is Dr. Dan Strange, who lives and works in the UK, formerly was connected with Oak Hill College in London. He's the director of Crosslands Forum, which is sort of a theological training institute. And he's the author of this really interesting book, Making Faith Magnetic. Dan gave me a copy of this book a year ago. I read it a year ago. Then I came back to it this past month and realized, man, this is really helpful stuff for basic evangelism. And so as we talked about last week, part of what I want to do and what I hope the Keller Center's work does is to equip ordinary Christians to have meaningful conversations about the gospel with friends, family members, neighbors, work associates, and so forth. And what Dan Strange is doing here is sort of a mix of apologetics and evangelism. He's basically taking some themes from Johann Bovink and helping us access them and make sense of them. Now, I wasn't familiar with Johann Bovink. Chris, you probably were.
Less familiar with Johann.
You were the one that took us down the Bovink rabbit hole in the first place. But so Hermann Bovink is the Bovink that we spent 2 years on this podcast working through his wonderful works of God. Johann Bovink is his nephew and took over, so, you know, sort of after Hermann Bovink's main influence, Johann then had a significant influence in the Netherlands in the season after that. Was also sort of more of a missiologist than a systematic theologian. I think he was a missionary in Indonesia for a while. And so what Dan Strange has done is sort of recovered some themes, some ideas from Johann Bovink's work, and then teed them up in ways that help us have conversations with our friends. So I want to work out the basic idea, and I want to give you five. So Dan Strange wants to give you five magnetic points, is what he calls them. So let me explain the idea of a magnetic point and where it's coming from. Bovink says there are five, well, there's probably more than five. Strange says there are five themes that every culture is always trying to sort out and figure out. Dan Strange calls these five being human itches that every person has to scratch. In other words, these are five questions everybody has, five things everybody has to sort out, five themes in every culture that need to have an answer. And they're a part of our shared humanity. And so what's interesting about that is he's saying, no matter what culture you find yourself in, that culture is going to have an answer to these five questions. And so, because these are human level questions. These magnetic points come out of the biblical teaching of Romans 1:18-23. And Chris, if you're willing, I'm going to have you read that for us just so we can get that biblical text in the background as we have this conversation.
Sure thing. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things.
This is a famous biblical passage for Christian apologetics that most theologians have wrestled with. And Dan Strange says, here's the weird thing about this passage. It tells us that non-Christians both know God, but don't know God. Like on the one hand, it's saying they knew God. And on the other hand, it's saying they suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And so how is it that we both know God and don't know God at the same time? And Bovink and Dan Strange working out Bovink's thought says this is the nature, this is sort of the strangeness of the human condition, is that we both suppress the truth and we substitute other things for God. We're deeply conflicted creatures. There's a sense in which we all want to worship, we're all chasing something transcendent, and there's a sense in which we pretend that's not true. And he, Strange quotes this great line from C.S. Lewis in Surprised by Hope, which is Lewis's autobiography, where he says, I dreaded the approach of him whom I so earnestly desired not to meet, which I think is such a funny, you know, C.S. Lewis is basically saying, you know, the Lord is chasing me down and I was dreading his approach because I so earnestly desired not to meet him, which sort of captures this idea of like, I knew he was there, but I didn't want to have to deal with him. And that's the idea of suppressing the truth. And so Strange says, so because that's true, everybody you meet in life is wrestling with these five magnetic points. There's these five things that draw us in, these five questions that sort of require an answer from us and demand that we honor them and respect them and do something with them. And so let's talk about what those five magnetic points are. Let me just walk through them. Chris and I have a little summary sheet that I wrote here in front of us. And so I want to try, some of these are very intuitive and others aren't. And so I want to try to frame them out real briefly, these five magnetic points, these five being human itches that every person has to scratch. The first is what Strange calls totality. In other words, is there a way to connect? The question here is, how can I be a part of something bigger? We all want to feel like we're part of the universe, like we have some connection to ultimate reality, like we're a part of something bigger than us. And at the same time, we don't want to lose our individuality. We don't want to be just absorbed into some big cosmic undifferentiated mass. We want to be part of something bigger than us and yet retain our individuality. And if you think about how this plays out in the culture, think about, you know, stadium sporting events. Go to a Nebraska football game, you're swept up in this thing that's bigger than you, but you're still there as one of the thousands of fans cheering. Think about a music concert. Think about a pride march for those who are progressive in our culture and sort of the ways that those marches have provided a rallying point for people who share a certain worldview. Think about conspiracy theories and how there's sort of a, you know, there's a group of people getting caught up in something bigger than them. And what he's pointing to is that all these things, sporting events, music concerts, pride marches, conspiracy theories, these are all expressions of the human desire for totality, this desire to connect with something bigger than us. Magnetic point number two, norm. Is there a way to live? Deep down, we know there are moral norms. We know that we all have like moral laws, moral rules that we live by. Think about, here's some examples in the culture, Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, which has been, you know, really popular, especially among young men. Think about social justice activists who expect authorities to enforce their norms. I'm thinking about the campus protests at Columbia and other places a few weeks ago where these people demanded that the administration respond to their demands for instance, divesting from all investments in the state of Israel, which is interesting that they're breaking campus rules by gathering on the quad and breaking into buildings, but they're making a demand that is a moral demand that the administration respond to them. Think about, this is a funny example Strange uses. Think about goth kids, you know, or kids who are into sort of a certain fashion subculture, a certain way of expressing themselves, who show that they're different by conforming to a different kind of norm. Like his point is there's a goth norm. Like there's a way you're supposed to dress if you're going to be that kind of a person that is both countercultural and yet its own norm at the same time. So we all have this magnetic point of desiring a way to live, a set of rules to live by. Third magnetic point, deliverance. Is there a way out? This is the one that's probably, you know, most obviously biblical. We all know something's not right with the world. We all long for a way out. We want to be delivered from, you know, malaise, despair, depression, discouragement, etc. Strange points out that where we look for deliverance depends on what we think we need deliverance from. So this is where it gets really fascinating as you think about, think about the progressive approach to religion, which is that religion is an oppressive thing that people need to be delivered from. And then think about the religious approach to some progressives, which is you're in the grip of something you need to be delivered from. So we both agree that people need to be delivered. We just disagree on what they need to be delivered from. And Dan Strange says that's your reference point for understanding that this magnetic point of deliverance is hardwired within human beings. Fourth magnetic point, destiny. Is there a way to control? We all want some kind of control over our future. We all want to be active agents in the world. We want to know that we have agency. And yet at the same time, we all have this sense that sometimes we're captive to events beyond our control. Think about the tornadoes that hit here just a few weeks ago. And just like that's a moment where we all realize like, oh gosh, we do not control the weather. We are not in control of where a tornado hits in our city or if it hits. There's forces beyond our control. And yet at the same time, we want to know we have agency. Dan Strange has this great phrase. I don't know if this is quoted from Bovink or if this is Strange's own rendering, but he says, we both lead and undergo our lives. There's a sense in which you are an actor and you are acted upon at the same time. And so there's this magnetic point of destiny. Is there a way for us to control our lives? Is there a way for us to be in charge of events? Think about, for instance, the Silicon Valley obsession with like transhumanism and cryogenics and, you know, ways to maximize your longevity so that you can live as long as possible. The ways that some people are talking about uploading your brain to the cloud so that your consciousness can live on after you die. These are all ways of trying to have control over our destiny. And then the fifth magnetic point is what Strange calls higher power. The question of, is there a way beyond? He says, in some sense, this is the magnetic point that's underneath all the other four. But, you know, obviously traditional religions believe in a higher power, something that's beyond. But his point is secularism believes in a higher power as well. It just pretends that it doesn't. But people have a vague belief in some sort of transcendence, some sort of something that is beyond us. Here's the example he uses. I was like, man, that's a really good example. You know, a few years ago, everybody was into Marie Kondo. She was like super popular because she's like organizing your space, getting rid of all the clutter, cleaning up your sock drawer, stuff like this. And he points out that Marie Kondo would come into a space and she'd talk about connecting with the space. And just needing to sort of be quiet in the space and connect with its essence. And he's just like, that's some kind of transcendence. Like there's some kind of a higher power thing going on there. He also talked about something which I was not familiar with, Chris, called champing. Did you know this was a thing?
I had heard of this before, yes.
I had never heard of this till I read it. But apparently, if you go to Europe, you can pay to camp overnight in a abandoned historic church building so that you get the blend of both camping being, you know, in nature, but also in this transcendent space.
Yeah. My guess is the people that do this are all white.
Yeah, probably so. But he said that idea of wanting to be connected in some kind of space that speaks of transcendence is this magnetic point of a higher power. So totality, is there a way to connect? Norm, is there a way to live? Deliverance, is there a way out? Destiny, is there a way to control? Higher power, is there a way beyond? These are the five magnetic points that resonate with every human being and are present in every culture. And what Strange says is Jesus is the subversive fulfillment of all of these. In other words, the gospel doesn't bypass these magnetic points. The gospel doesn't say, why are you trying to control your life? You should just submit to Jesus. Instead, it subversively fulfills that. So if you think about the magnetic point of destiny, is there a way to control? It says, actually, the only way to control your life is to submit control to the lordship of Jesus Christ. And then therefore, in submission to Jesus, you gain agency and are given actually a way to live a meaningful destiny in the world. So he talks about that actually the way we want to think about all five of these as we proclaim the gospel is that there's something very deeply true about that. There's a way that what Jesus does both subverts that longing and shows you it can't be fulfilled through anything in creation, and then that it is fulfilled in Christ. And this gets back to sort of the antithesis, the idea that we talked about of common grace and antithesis last week, where there's common grace in the sense that these things are present in every human, but then there's antithesis in the sense that the gospel confronts our idolatrous answers to these questions, you know. So for those people who, you know, higher power, they believe in, you know, some kind of higher consciousness, but it's not the God who created the heavens and the earth. The gospel both subverts that and fulfills it, right? Christ is the fulfillment of that longing for a higher power, but first I have to come to grips with the fact that he is actually Lord, and I don't get to hold on to my idolatrous beliefs in pantheism or something of that nature. So those five magnetic points I found really helpful, even as a preacher, Chris, thinking about, okay, how can I start to connect my preaching to some of these baseline human longings and feelings?
Yeah, that was the first thing my mind went to as I was reading the handout, was just how to purposefully think through which of these categories is particularly relevant to whatever text I'm preaching, and how can I make those connections. But the bigger thing that I started to think through as I was reading this is this all resonates. I think these are good categories, and then the examples he gives, like, man, this all makes really good sense. But the question I always wrestle with things like this is, how aware are people of these things? Because, I mean, they are part of just sort of our natural beingness, the kind of the itches that we have to scratch, and we do it intuitively. We don't necessarily know we're doing that.
Right.
So what does it look like to sort of make these things more self-conscious in people's minds?
That's a great question. By the way, I should mention, if you're interested in reading more about this, Dan Strange has a book called Making Faith Magnetic, published by the Good Book Company. It's actually a really accessible little book, about 160 pages or so. So, you know, go read his treatment of these magnetic points. But I think what you're getting at is the real question, Chris, which is, okay, these things are so intuitive. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if part of what Dan Strange is trying to do is that as we name that, it starts to give categories for things. I mean, you've probably seen this in your preaching, right? Where when you start relating with a non-Christian, in the very first place, they're like, why should I care about Jesus? But then as you start to name some of the things like worship, idolatry, you're living for something, occasionally some lights start going on and they start going, I see that. You know, I see how what you're saying is true. And I wonder if that's kind of what he's trying to do here, is to say, yeah, nobody gets up in the morning and says, how today am I going to find totality? Or what norm am I going to live by? But that when we start to sort of, as Christians, be able to name these for people, we help them see what they might not yet see.
Yeah, yeah. The way that I've sometimes framed it is there's, and it kind of even goes to the point that Paul makes in Romans, is that there is this suppression there, but there's this almost this spell that's just kind of in blindness that people walk around. And it's like, how do you kind of break the spell? Even if it's, hey, let me just make you aware of what you're doing. Just so it's like, hey, do you realize that this is what you're doing? And maybe they persist in the rebellion and persist in the sin and stubbornness, but at least now there's this kind of moment where, hey, you have to consciously account for what you're doing. And then let's have a conversation about that. Let's work through that. So finding those points to kind of break that spell, give awareness, and doing it in a way that doesn't, I don't know, come across of like, hey, I'm going to just read into your soul and tell you all the things that you're doing kind of in this, I don't know, paternalistic way, but at the same time, it's helpful to just, because most people don't reflect on why they do what they do. So to be able to enter into that and give people a space to kind of reflect, I think is a good way to kind of start to engage them with the gospel.
I think this happens best in relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
So part of what you're saying is this, you don't just go on a street corner and say, hey, you guys are all looking for a norm and I have one for you in Jesus. That's a very ham-handed way of applying this. But that as you're in conversation with real human beings, this starts to give capacity to name things that everybody intuitively is thinking about or wrestling with. And in a conversation with a thoughtful Christian, sometimes these things can come to the forefront. As an example, you know, I do less person-to-person evangelism now than I used to. And that's kind of sad to me. I actually really love that. But back when I was in a campus ministry, I was frequently, weekly, having personal one-on-one conversations with non-Christian skeptics. And, you know, you're just trying to just honor where they're at, mm-hmm. but get them to think more deeply about why they believe what they believe. And oftentimes in conversations like that, for instance, I would talk with, you know, hardcore skeptics and atheists and, you know, that thought that only Christians thought people should live a certain way. And it was fun in a conversation to say, well, hold on, don't you also believe people should live a certain way? Like you have a certain norm.
Yeah.
It might not be the Christian norm, but by saying you shouldn't share the gospel with people, that's a moral ought as well. And so, as people are like, yeah, you're right. You know, in a relationship where it's safe to acknowledge, yeah, you have a point there, which that's not social media and it's not, you know, the first time you meet someone, but in a conversational relationship where it's okay for people to acknowledge, oh yeah, you have a point there. Oftentimes just helping people see that they're doing that can be an entry point where they move a little bit closer to being willing to hear the gospel.
Yeah. A question that I've been asking more recently, probably over the past year or two, is questions like, Why do you think that? Or why do you suppose you do these things? So just asking in a posture of curiosity, hey, just tell me why that's so important to you. Why are you so fired up about XYZ? And as a way where it's not, I mean, what I'm trying to do is provoke reflection, but the first movement into it is like, hey, I just want to know you. I'm just curious about why it is you do what you do or believe what you believe. And then from there, ask further questions and kind of probe more to see, hey, how did that belief or how did that value start to take shape in a person's life? And as that person starts to reflect on that, it's surprising. Like you said, that like things are the conclusions that they'll come to that maybe they had never thought, like, oh yeah, I really do have a moral norm, or I really do have particular values that are either close to Christianity or we share things, or man, it's very much not. And here's the reasons why. And so it's fun if you even just approach it from this friendly curiosity of engaging somebody, and people generally like to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
And so if you just ask them good questions about themselves, they'll give you a lot of good insight into what makes them tick.
One of the things I particularly like about this is it's theological in its grounding, meaning that Romans chapter 1 passage really is the anchor point for the whole idea here, that my non-Christian friends actually know God and don't know God at the same time. To go back to that C.S. Lewis quote, they're fearing the approach of the one they earnestly desire not to meet. And if you know, what I like to think about is doing evangelism or apologetics from a robustly theological foundation, right? If Romans 1 is true, it's telling you that every human being in your life is suppressing the truth and yet knows that there's a God. And so an approach that allows me to talk about both those things of like, hey, Chris, I actually think you know there's a God. I actually think you know that there, you know, I'm not crazy for thinking that there's a creator. Mm-hmm. Now, fine, you don't believe in creation. You believe, you know, you don't believe there is a God, or you say you don't. But, you know, being able to work both sides of that contradiction is really fun sometimes, because it allows you to affirm the real transcendent longings that are in someone, but also help them see the ways that they're pointing those maybe in the wrong direction in an idolatrous way. Yeah. And the category of idolatry has just been helpful to me here in many, many conversations where if I can help someone see, hey, it's not that Christians worship and I don't. It's not that Christians believe in God and I don't. It's not that Christians are longing for a higher power and I'm not. It's actually that there's something inherent within me that does long for transcendence. Mm-hmm. I just find it in art.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm pointing that longing in a different direction. I feel like that's been very helpful to me to be able to name and say, well, can you see that that's kind of your God? That's mm-hmm. your idol. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is taking this thing that's supposed to be pointed at the God who made you, and you're pointing it at creation instead, what Romans 1 says.
Yeah. So we've talked about this on the podcast before, where a lot of good apologists and cultural commentators have noted that in our culture today, the question is not so much what is true, but what is good or what is beautiful. So if we were to map that kind of cultural moment onto these, would it be what would it kind of fit? Would totality or norm kind of fit as we think about those that kind of category?
I feel like norm definitely does, because the whole concept of morality is about what's good, what's not good.
Yeah.
And yeah, probably totality also. What does it mean? What are we meant to be part of that's bigger than ourselves? How can we be part of something bigger than ourselves that doesn't compromise our individuality? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it feels to me like those ones probably most squarely land in that category of, is Christianity good? But yeah, I actually think destiny might as well. What most people are trying to do is have some semblance of control over their lives.
Yeah.
And we would say like, and actually agency is good. Like having some meaningful kind of control is good. And idolatrous, because what I want is I want to be God.
Yeah.
I want to be able to control my life and everybody else's so that everything works the way that I want it to work.
Yeah. You consider the radical individualism in our culture where, hey, I can make my own identity, even down to changing my biology, changing my gender, is part of this control. Like we have just completely bought into this idea that I have godlike control over my entire being. And hey, how is the idolatrous nature of that, where I have removed any semblance of a higher power and put myself there? Say, hey, do you see the problem with that of trying to take a godlike posture and the ways that actually you lose control and that you enslave yourself to particular things, or you do damage to yourself over the long term? So yeah, interesting ways that you can get into that too.
Let me describe what these magnetic points enable us to do as Christians. They enable us to draw one circle and then draw two circles. Let me explain what I mean. One of the great problems in evangelism is that it creates an us versus them, right? We believe in Jesus. You don't. We want you to. You should. He's the Lord. So there's a right, wrong, us, them that does naturally get created, and that's biblical, right? Think about all the Johannine language about the world versus Christ and the kingdom of God, right? Don't love the world or things in the world. So there really is this dichotomy. But the question is, how in evangelism do you not create an adversarial scenario where it's like, I have the right answer, you're wrong, you should repent and believe what I believe? Because of course, in our culture right now, everybody perceives that to be intolerant, bigoted, you know, selfish. What these magnetic points do is they allow us to, first of all, draw one circle and say, hey, can't you see that we all are seeking, you know, I, just like you, non-Christian friend, am seeking destiny, I'm seeking totality, I'm seeking a higher power. Like every human being does this. And see, if I can draw the big circle that says we human beings are all in this boat together, what that does is it flattens the sense that like I've got the right answer and you don't have the right answer. Really what it says is like we're all searching for X.
Yeah.
And you know, I think Jesus is the one who actually can fulfill that in the fullest and deepest way.
Yeah.
But if you don't find it in Jesus, you're going to find it in something. And so being able to draw one circle before we draw two circles, I have found, again, to be very helpful, because it starts by leveling the playing field and saying, hey, every human being is looking for totality, something to give ourselves to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can't you see that we all do that? Now, let me show you how Christianity gives us a way of doing that that doesn't take away our individuality, but actually that honors who we are as individuals and pulls us into something bigger than we ever dreamed of. That, I think, is a way to not avoid the antithesis of evangelism, but to soften it by starting with the reality of like, hey, we're all, first of all, human beings.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. And having, I think, so a conversation with my uncle, who he is an interesting character. Love him to death. He at one time was a deacon in a church and went through some, the church went through some really bad stuff. Now he wouldn't, you claim to be agnostic. And he and I have had some good conversations, but being able to find that common ground. And one of the things that I have come to start to ask him is like, why do you think I believe what I believe? And in the sense of what you're talking about, of like, hey, if we're all sort of, we're all have these magnetic points and we're all answering them in particular ways. And it's not like, hey, I believe what you believe and you, you know, I believe what I believe, you believe what you believe. And we're kind of that postmodern sense, but more, again, just trying to seek understanding of, hey, tell me, how would you explain my view, as a way to, for them to try to get inside, and you're creating a little bit more of like a human touch point there. Mm. Not so much like hostility, but explain to me, well, why do you suppose? And you think if there's enough relationship there, most people aren't going, 'cause I think you're just an ignorant bigot.
Right.
I think they're going to probably be more gracious and more thoughtful. And then it becomes this, well, do you see how I could, you know, why I would believe that? And it just gives them this, they're going to have to ponder that and wrestle through that a little bit more. And so I like that. If you're drawing that one circle, hey, let's get inside that and kind of consider where each other are. That I think that just gives a good human opportunity to share the gospel, to get people to consider the gospel, consider Christianity in some ways that maybe they're just not going to on their own, or reading a book or engaging in social media.
And when you hear me say that one circle, two circle thing, that's not pragmatism. That's theology.
Yeah.
That's starting with Genesis 1.
Yeah.
Every human being made in the image of God. So it's starting with, there actually is a common humanity that we all share. And there also is a truth that those who are called out of the kingdom of darkness and into the kingdom of light are differentiated and distinct and different from the world. And so there is, both of those things are biblical. There's one circle called humanity that we all belong to. And within that humanity, there are believers and unbelievers. There are the people of God and those who are not currently belonging to the people of God. And so I don't want listeners to hear that as like, oh, that's a neat apologetic strategy to make people feel like we're all on the same page. Yeah. Actually, what it is it's Genesis 1 before Romans 1. It's starting with, hey, we're all human beings. We're all trying to make sense of this world. And if we are created, we all have these same longings and desires and inclinations. And then the gospel gives us answers to those that are rich and satisfying and deep. So I hope you'll check out the book, Making Faith Magnetic. Again, it's put out by the Good Book Company. And I hope this podcast will be helpful to you, again, as you think about engaging real non-Christians in your life, real people who think differently than you. Consider these five magnetic points and whether they might help you start a good conversation, or ask some good questions, or further a relationship that you already have with someone who is seeking these five things somewhere else other than Christ.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, thank you for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.